I'm Gillian.
And I'm Pierre, and you're listening to Breaking Through Careers, the podcast that gets your career questions answered.
Each episode, we speak to an ordinary person from a well-known or not so well-known profession so that we can find out what they do on a day-to-day basis and what they did in order to get there.
What do you most like about your job?
What do you actually do day-to-day?
What advice would you give someone?
What do you find most challenging about your job?
How do you balance your family?
Tell us something that you're really good at.
Tell us something you're really bad at.
How much do you get paid? So today we're asking, what does a tax advisor actually do? I'm joined by my co-host Pierre, who's in a land down under. Hi Pierre, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Not bad, thanks.
How's the weather like down in here?
Oh my God, we're doing literally the most British and Australian thing ever and talking about the weather.
Hey, down here in Melbourne, the season come like literally four times a day.
What are you most looking forward to learning about?
Well, to be honest with you, like I want to see the best way I can save my money by taking all the advice that he can give me in terms of keeping my receipts. This is what I hear about.
This isn't a personal tax advice session for Pierre.
Hey, you get access to these kind of people, you gotta take your advantages and make sure you walk away with something that you use for a while. Today we're going to be talking to Shan. Shan is a tax advisor, bracket, modern day Robin Hood from the UK.
And today he's going to be telling us about himself, the great things about being a tax advisor, his thoughts on Excel spreadsheets, which some of you find out that I also love, and whether or not you need to be good at maths to succeed in tax. Shan, welcome.
Hi, Gillian.
How are you?
Very good. How are you?
I'm excited for our first ever podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, yes. I'm truly the guinea pig now.
So our first section is a quick fire round where we just try to get to know you a little better. So we'll ask a few random questions and all you need to do is answer them as quickly as possible with the first answer that comes into your mind. Ready?
Of course. Go on. I'm worried.
That's okay. We'll start you off nice and easy. First one, Netflix or Prime?
Ooh, Netflix.
Did you attend a private school or government school?
Private school.
Would you rather be too hot or too cold?
Too hot.
Favorite type of tax?
None.
Are you allowed to say that? Okay. Introvert or extrovert?
Introvert.
Favorite calculator?
The one on the laptop.
What is 25,747 multiplied by 32.5 plus 4?
I didn't hear that.
Name one thing that you're really bad at.
Doing podcasts, probably. Not that I've done many before this.
Green olives or black olives?
Black olives.
Wrong answer.
I didn't know it was judgmental podcast. It was supposed to be about me.
Sorry, I'll get back in my lane.
Good.
Nerdy or not nerdy?
Not nerdy.
This next round is about you.
Where are you from and what city do you live in?
Long story short, I'm from London. I'm originally from India and I came to the UK to complete my schooling and then, of course, university, and now I'm working here. So obviously, I've been living here for about 20 odd years now. And I feel myself a true Londoner, as in having lots of international friends, enjoying foreign foods, and also kind of, you know, looking at what the city offers in terms of like art and culture and
pollution,
not so much actually. I mean, you know, people think, but it's not as bad as some of the other countries. But I do enjoy London the way it is.
That's great. Why did you agree to come to our podcast, by the way?
Basically, what the topic or the key kind of the theme of your podcast is to encourage people and to inspire others who are listening to it and who want to kind of seek career in something that they are not too familiar with. I find that topic quite interesting and to inspire young people. I mean, I never thought of myself in role model capacity in any shape and sort, but I think it's something that is quite inspiring. If one person listens to your story and they reach out, ask more questions, and they feel like, okay, you know, I can relate to this person and I can look up to him, I think that that is just a powerful tool in this world. And I think that's something that I'd enjoy. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Well, from today onward, mate, you're going to become a role model. What's your job and what sort of organization do you work for?
I work in what they call the big four accountancy firms, PwC, Deloitte, Ernst & Young, and KPMG. They are basically professional accounting, tax, corporate advisory, and audit firm. They basically work with the biggest names in the country, or globally rather, in advising them in ensuring their accounting practices are up to scratch, their tax advisors are correct, their audits are in good shape, and basically advise also specifically on M&A, maybe some consulting, et cetera, et cetera. So I've been working in my current organization for about 5 years now, but I also started my career about 10 years ago, or rather 11 years ago now, at one of these big firms as part of their management consulting practice. Basically, within that, I specialize in tax advisory, and within tax advisory,
I told you, Joe.
Exactly.
Beware, PM may ask some inappropriate questions about his personal finances. Just a heads
up. Saying, offline, I'm going to ask you about my personal tax because it might be in a bit of strife here, but yeah.
I don't think you can afford the fees, Piers.
Hey, offline.
He's going to be doing some deals.
Exactly.
Did you know what you wanted to be when you were older, back when you were at school?
It's a very loaded question, yes. So when I was in school, I wanted to be a pilot, which is obviously not what I am today. Yeah, like fly aeroplanes, you know. Yeah, but not really what I am today. But it's interesting. People think tax advisory is a boring old world, but it is not. It is something that you really get under the skin of businesses, really understand how economy works. You really understand how people operate. You really get to know what technologies are making differences today. And basically, I kind of stumbled into it, I would say, like most people's careers do. But when I started myself in sort of management consulting about 11 years ago, I started working in finance advisory, then focusing within those. Luckily, I was enough to do projects which involved some kind of tax elements within those projects because finance and tax are intricately linked. After that, my interest sparked. And basically through that, I focused my career in specific areas of tax advisory. And I would say it's more technology oriented rather than just reading big fat books and then going through, the laws and case studies and stuff like that. It's not something that a lot of tax advisors do nowadays. I think that's the biggest misconception people have.
Yeah. What kind of kid were you when you were young?
Oh, I was very talkative.
What a surprise.
Guilty.
Always being told off by teachers in the class. Yeah, or my report cards used to say very talkative, very chatty. Only if he can apply himself, he will go much further than where he is at the moment. But I would call myself now, retrospectively looking back, I would say I was inquisitive as a child. I was interested in other people. I was interested in what's going around me rather than just, keep my head down and carry on working. I think that's, and kind of it's interesting because that's the world I operate in today, because I talk to a lot of our clients day-to-day basis. And that is what I do. I talk to them. I kind of understand what is really going on in terms of their work, And if you establish that rapport with someone, the clients tend to trust you as well with more and more information in the future, because it is not given in any shape and form. So it is quite interesting how that talkative nature is reflected in my today's job. But I would add to that and say that by no means I was super good in maths, or I was super good in sciences. I was a average student overall. I would never be like the top of the class, but I was never at the bottom of it. I was very, very average, I would say.
Oh, don't say that about yourself, Shan.
What do you think your unique skills are and how they have helped you on your journey to become successful?
I would think empathy. So the ability to put yourself in other person's shoes. I've been told by other people that's my best quality that I have. And then add on top the ability to kind of, naturally problem solve, own a solution and say, well, here's the problem, let's find a solution. I think the pragmatic way of looking at things. I think those are the two elements which I kind of say go hand in hand for me.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. What are some of the resources that has helped you?
Yeah, it's a very good question, actually. I mean, in resource systems, like my parents were not living with me, or rather I was not living with my parents when I was doing my A-levels and my university. I was living away from them. So basically, they were not in my day-to-day life to give me guidance. So I think I had to rely on like mentors or rely on like teachers just to ask questions or just to drive me a little bit further. I mean, of course, my parents were always there at a telephone call away where you could ask them questions if you needed to. But I would personally say that has not been the biggest resource that I tapped into. I thought the world around me was quite interesting where I talked to, and you can't rely on a single person, right? And I think you have to be naturally a bit of a, how can I say, a bit of a grafter where you need to find people that support you a little bit more. And that could be a couple, you know, the school kids that you, it could be even your classmate, for example, who is good at some, say, maths or football or whatever. You can rely on him to help you that. And when we were kind of at university or started off working, I think there's a lot of, you know, the internet had picked up really well and the online resources were just doubling and doubling. So you could always rely on finding or inspiring yourself by someone else's story who lives in like America or South America, whatever, someone that you wouldn't have had access to before, but you certainly can now read someone's story from somewhere else. And in terms of studying and say focusing on like mathematics or sciences, I think it's just about like getting right support through school or through like tuitions or whatever you have going on, just applying yourself there. And it's not about doing everything 100%. It's about getting the basics right and doing them again and again and again. I think that's what helps.
We're going to move on to our third section, which is about your current role. So it is our longest section, so it might get a bit taxing.
I had to go somewhere.
Okay, so you touched on your route from the age of 16 to where you are now career-wise. Can you also sort of loop in any qualifications that you might have needed to gain along the way?
Of course. Yeah, so I got myself certified in tax accountant software, which is called SAP, but maybe a bit nerdy. So it is one of the most popular softwares which is being used today in many organizations. So my company supported me through that. I think that's very useful to have. Also, I finished my tax technicians qualifications, which is the technical side of tax and accountancy as well. So it's almost like a chartered status that you gain that you're able to practice and even create your own business. There are a lot of private schools or there is the tuitions that are available that can help you with that. It's a tough exam. I wouldn't lie. But if you get yourself in the right setting, I think they support you quite a lot with those professional qualifications, which are necessary to operate in the industry that you work in. And there are different levels of those as well. You don't have to do like the super complex ones, which are master's level in tax, but you can do, say, a graduate level of those, and they take about 2 years, 3 years of not continuous studying. You can do them whilst you're working on the side with your work giving you enough break during your working hours to go study or go attend college.
So are they nice to have or are they required for you to practice?
I mean, if you get on to one of the graduate schemes that you, of the Big Four or the Big Ten organizations, they will usually pay for you and you have to get them. That's the part of your contract anyways. And I would almost say they are not just nice to have, they are necessary to have in the area that we operate in, because they bring, first of all, credibility to your role, because that's the kind of clientele you'll be speaking with as well. So the exams or the knowledge provides you with, let's say, it arms you with information that you are going to use in your day-to-day job, firstly. And secondly, it also gives you that ability to sit down and, you know, study and look at a problem from a bigger scale of things as well. And I think that's, it's a necessary evil of the jobs that we work in, I would say. Yeah.
Does the same apply for university? Necessary evil?
Ooh, and that's an interesting question, because you can enroll yourself in any of these big organizations as an apprentice. So you don't have to go to university. You can finish your A-levels and then come out and apply straight for those jobs, and they will support you to get these qualifications, which are almost like a graduate level degree as well, and they will support you to do that. So university is not required to get into these types of jobs, but these types of formal qualifications, which are the ACA or, you know, the ICWA or the host raft of, you know, their various accounting kind of degrees, they don't require you to have a college degree.
But let's say like you're working your way up through the ranking within the accounting firm, right? Will this be an issue later down the track if you want to get a higher position?
That's a very, very good question, Piers, actually. And it is not, interestingly, because many people we know, although my seniors, they are, most of them are accountants or tax CTAs, as they call it, like the certified tax advisors. We would say it is not necessarily required going forward, I feel, because there is a lot of element of technology that's coming into play now than the traditional old accounting or accountancy world that existed before. So if you're good at certain technology, say if you're a coder, if you're a developer, if you understand machine learning, blockchain, all these good things that you're going to be hearing about in the news, or if you just Google these terms, I think they are definitely out there at the moment. There is potential and the world is moving in that direction. So I think, and this is just my personal opinion, I think even if you understand some basics of accountancy or technology, and if you have a very kind of, you know, deep skill sets in software development or machine learning, or help develop softwares which bring you more into the accountancy elements within those, I think you'll be able to make success out of your own role.
How easy or difficult would it be for someone from another field to move into tax advisory then?
In my experience, I've never seen someone who has just drastically pivoted from, say, catering into tax advisory world. I think that's a bit of a too much of a jump in terms of not, I'm not saying about in terms of skill sets at all, because you can retrain yourself and if you have the ability, but then it might require just a bit more of a training to reach to that level, if that makes sense. So you might have to spend some more time in getting an extra qualification, or you might have to spend some time in reading some books, which are, you know, a bit taxing. But I would almost say it's possible. So I don't want to discourage anyone by saying it's not possible at all. I would think it's possible, but you might have a longer lead up time to it compared to someone who has done maybe a bit of mathematics or economics at A levels. Part of our company, we take graduates or people with A-levels from a vast variety of things. I mean, you know, people who have done geography degrees can work in finance nowadays, right? So so it's possible.
Could you please talk through an average Tuesday for you so we can understand a typical working hours?
Absolutely, yeah. So average Tuesday, I make sure someone brings me a coffee to my table. No. joking. It's not that kind of world anyways anymore. Nobody brings you a coffee. So on an average Tuesday, I would say if it's usually spring or summer months, I would cycle into work. I really like that because it opens your mind up in the morning. It keeps you kind of fresh as well. And I think it's really, really nice to spend some time away from computer or social media to my desk about 8:30. Then by 9 o'clock, I'll start going through my emails or start going through my action list, which I'm working on. And that could be related to one of the projects I'm working, or it could be related to some of the internal tasks I'm doing. Usually about 9:30, we will have a internal meeting. It could be just on the projects that we are working on that we report into our seniors. It's just a 10-15 minute call or kind of a group huddle that we just come together and talk through our days or weeks plan. Then about 10 o'clock, I'll start cracking on with my project tasks. And that could involve maybe calling up a client for some clarifications or working through some of the notes associated with the workings that I'm doing at the moment. And it could be on some of the design documents that I'm working on with the technology platform that we are implementing, or it's looking at a couple Excels. Yes, we do look at Excels, but it's not too, how can I say, not as boring as it sounds, because it's quite automated.
I love Excel.
Yeah. Well, that's again, a prerequisite, right?
Shout out to Bill Gates.
Exactly. then usually about 10:30 or 11, you will have a quick catch up with either someone I'm mentoring at work, or with even with my people leader. So someone who's mentoring me, we could grab a quick coffee or a chat, which is about 15-20 minutes, just to see how it's going, how you're feeling. I think that's quite nice because it's not all mechanical and robotic as it sounds, because it's quite a people business. So you do interact quite a lot with people. And then about 12:30, I would get lunch, come back to my desk, then maybe read some news on BBC or Financial Times. So I'll look at that whilst having lunch. Then about 1 o'clock, start cracking on with the work tasks again, which could involve getting some clarifications from some people, working on a bigger project, which usually means like helping a big aerospace and defense company to improve their supply chain, or how the goods come into the country, and look at the taxation element around those. So those are the kind of problems that we'll work with. And that is, again, as you say, it's not just a one-person job because it's a big task. So we would then relate with like different directors, partners, people that we'd work with day-to-day, a client, usually in a call, and those are the kind of things that we'll work with. And in doing so, we'll also bring up juniors with us to make sure they're taking correct notes, they understand the problem, et cetera, et cetera. I tend to shoot off about 5 o'clock. 90% of the time, I won't work from home. But once in a while, if you're having calls with the US or something like that, then I would just have to log in from home. Or if not, then I'll maybe stay in the office till about 6, finish off all the tasks that we have for the day, try to answer these kind of, you know, the big problems for the clients. Then evenings are usually free and weekends are free as well. So we work the solid hours, I would say the usual 9 to 6 or 8:30 till 6. But as you can see, they're interspersed with coffee and chats and, you know, with some exercise in between as well.
FT reading,
exactly. So that's required as well, because you might want to understand the macro elements of the world.
Is it then fair to say that tax advisors do typically work in the offices of their organizations, but it is possible to work from home?
Absolutely, yes. We tend to work one day a week from home anyways, most of the people do.
Well, I suppose a related question might be, how easy would you say it is to manage your role as a tax advisor and a family?
Personally speaking, I don't have a big family, so I can't say, but I can imagine a lot of my colleagues who have got a couple of kids or who have a family to support, and they seem to juggle it quite well. And the work is so flexible. Say, for example, if you have some emergency at home, or if your child needs picking up from nursery just because, you know, something's happened somewhere else, as long as you're informing the right people around you, it's totally possible. And they support it, because that then creates like this positive working environment where you don't have to feel pressured that if you can't be somewhere else, you won't be able to solve the problems. And they're expecting that you're a grown-up, you're a professional, and you will take responsibility of the tasks that have been given to you, and then juggle that around your other commitments. And that could be personal, family commitments, or even your hobbies, or even, yeah, supporting someone else as well.
Can you tell us the difference between economics, finance, and accounting?
That's a very, very good question. So accounting, let's start with accounting, because that's something which I'm comfortable with. So accounting is basically just doing up your numbers for your business, simplistically speaking. It's about keeping a ledger of records or book of records of the transactions that your business operates in. And it is similar to your own personal finance as well. So you are keeping a tab on how much money is coming in and how much money is going out. Mm-hmm. So finance, as you ask, is then financing. That includes elements of budgeting around it as well, or it could also include forecasting. It could also impact on how you're making investments, etc. So finance has got a bigger role to play than just... So accounting is the transactional element of the finance, I would say. And then economics takes the whole macro, which is the wider global trends, into picture, or micro, which is your basic trends of what's going to happen today and tomorrow. And economics is really how the world functions in terms of, you know, as at the moment, as you were aware of the pandemic that's going on, at the moment, it's affecting the global economy. I mean, what does that mean? Because of the pandemic in place, there might be a drop in how the goods are moving or supply, or, you know, the supermarket need to think about what's going to happen 3 months down the road because of this macroeconomic trend that's going on, which is your pandemic, etc. So economics is basically thinking about how the world moves in terms of finance, in terms of accounting, in terms of, you know, taking these trends into consideration as well.
Just back to your specific role, what would you say that you most and least like about your job?
So most I like about my job is basically talking to people, if you've noticed.
Surprise, surprise.
And also on top, I would say understanding the real business that they operate in. So for example, if I'm advising or if I'm working with a big supermarket chain or a big aerospace and defense company, I really enjoy understanding where the goods are coming from or how the manufacturing of what's happening on the supermarket stores, where is that goods coming from and where they go to, etc. And the third element, I also get to travel to some of quite interesting places in the world. So that's also, I'm lucky enough to travel the globe for my work. And I think that's been real fun as well. And you get to do on company money as well. So you're not complaining at all. And what I don't enjoy is endless boring meetings in offices which have no windows, for example. It's quite soul crunching, I would say, almost, because after 15 minutes, you're usually lost the will to live where someone's talking about something. So those are the things that I don't enjoy anymore. But I think in the new digital world, or due to the pandemic, the way people have adopted working remotely, I think we don't have to go through this anymore in the future. So I think the traditional role of these soul-destroying meetings will probably be coming to end pretty soon, and I'm looking forward for that.
Yeah, I think quite a few organizations are going to change the way in which they operate.
What's the starting salary and what's the top earners within your industry?
Oh, let's start with the top earners, which I'll make, well, which I'll tell you, I'm definitely not one of them. The top earners can earn between 500,000 GBP, 600,000 USD, I think, and that's just the starting salary for the top earners. I think it can go a bit higher than that. It depends. And you have to put at it, you won't be starting off that salary. Don't be under any illusions. You have to work hard.
Can I just ask a question? What classifies a top earner?
People who are usually at a VP, vice president, director, partner, kind of managing director levels. And you would have to be in that industry for about 20 odd years. Let's say on the lower side of things, if you are a college apprentice or if you are a graduate, you would start off with about 30,000 USD or about £25,000, I would say. But think of it, you are quite young then, 22, 24, or even if you're a school leaver, you could be 18 years of age, really. And I think you can start earning that salary, pay towards some of your savings, pension, rentals, all of that. You can support yourself in that sense. You might not have a lot of liquid assets left on top, but you could really kind of, you know, it's still a decent livable salary that you start off. And then you kind of rise through the hierarchy and then it gets higher. Then you enter after, say, about 10 years, you can go into a six-figure salary, starting six-figure salary, and then you kind of go on from there as well. So I think there's definitely clear hierarchy within many organizations, but it is achievable for every single person, I would say.
What kind of firms will hire tax advisors? Is it just the big accounting firms that you mentioned, or can you work within industry? And are there specific job titles as you go to the top?
Tax advisors won't just be hired by, you know, the big four or big six companies. So you definitely can work in any industry, any company, and any advisory firm. They will always require tax accountants, tax advisors, I think. So don't be disheartened. Usually in industry, the highest role is either a head of tax or a vice president of finance and tax, treasury even. So you would get to that level, say about 20 years of work experience. Mm-hmm. And then within a professional firm, it's usually a partner, a senior partner, who would also get there about 15, 20 years of work experience.
Under myth busting, the section where we're going to try to tackle some of the stereotypes associated with your industry.
Okay.
We'll make a statement and you've got to try and answer with either myth or fact. Working in tax or finance is boring. More of a myth or more of a fact?
Myth.
Okay. People who work in finance are rich and greedy. More myth or more fact?
Oh, that's a myth as well. I think they're rich, but definitely not greedy. I think they're hardworking, conscientious people who really care about the people they work with and for.
I concur. Not biased at all, also working in the industry. Anyway, you have to be really good at maths to work in tax.
It's a myth. You don't have to be really good. You need to be, like, look at me, as I said before, I was quite an average student, and I'm still getting there, because you have to have appreciation of numbers, especially percentages, calculations of how structures work, but you don't need to understand how calculus is done, for example, because you'll never use it in your life. But the basics that you learn at GCSE, or the basic algebra or basic maths that you learn at A-levels even, you need to be good at that. You don't have to be like super good, or you don't have to take advanced classes in mathematics unless you are really interested in it. But you can be good.
Tax professionals spend all day looking at Excel spreadsheet.
No, not all day, but I would say it's 50% of your time. You'd look at Excel spreadsheets, but they are not necessarily just numbers that you look, but we use Excel, for example, to do a project plan or to capture action items. So it's just general a tool to do different things, just because it's quite easy to use as well.
Tax professionals benefit from and capitalize on legislative ambiguity to benefit big, bad clients as opposed to the wider, lovely society. Myth or fact?
I mean, it's somewhere in between, I would say now, because I think the ambiguity in tax is there just because it's the nature of the law, right? I mean, lawyers would say that there's an ambiguity. Some people could definitely do to benefit the society a bit more, that I agree that part on, but I'm not saying that everyone would be in that position where they are trying to rip off the society. I don't think they're definitely doing that. In turn, they're actually contributing economically or financially to society quite a lot, really, because of the taxes they collect in behalf of other big organizations, etc., etc. So there's an element of there to be a bit savvy around it, but I think you get caught out pretty sharpish around that. So
tax and financial services sectors more broadly is more for posh older Caucasian male.
Ooh, I mean, that's a myth now. I mean, I think it's definitely was a fact, I would say, maybe 20, 30 years ago, just because there were not many of other people in that area. But I mean, no offense to anyone anywhere, but look at us three, really. I mean, we are not exactly from the posh Caucasian background, neither of us. And we are slowly and steadily getting there. So I think there is a generational change coming in the future, but it definitely won't dislodge the old school kind of way of thinking, I would think. But let's do another podcast about that if you want.
Yeah, you're more than welcome back. Shan the tax man, take two. Yeah. It takes forever to qualify as a tax advisor and the job is really hard. Myth or fact?
Yeah, it's a myth, because it takes about a good 3-4 years to qualify, but it's not forever. But again, you will get there just by hard work. There is no other secret to it. So I think it's doable, but it is like doing a mini marathon. You're not going to achieve that in one afternoon. But if you apply yourself over a period of time again and again, it's definitely achievable within every boy's or every girl's limit, I think. Yeah.
On to our final section, looking forward. And essentially, we're just trying to help people who are interested in your industry get to where you are now. So I'll start off with the first one, which is, what kind of work experience should our listeners try to get before trying to enter your industry?
I would say, I mean, I used to work in Sainsbury's on tills. So Sainsbury's is a big supermarket in the UK, by the way, Piers. So
like Coles or Woolworths here or something. Right?
Exactly. So that helped me, just because I wouldn't disregard any kind of work experience. But if you have an ability to or opportunity to work in an office setting in some kind of professional environment, that definitely will help. And specifically, if you want to target into working in finance or accounting, you can do like school leaver schemes where you can do like a 3-week or 4-week work experience in big firms as well, accountancy, finance firms. I think that helps as well. So I think the variety of experience could help you.
Do you have any other pieces of advice for people wanting to enter your industry? Firstly, at the entry level, and secondly, transferring in if they're already established professional?
Definitely. I think the first advice I've given is that don't think that it is not for you. because it definitely is for everyone. So don't have that bias already to say, well, tax or accounting, it's all boring. It's not at all. It's fun. It's with good people and it's definitely a joy to work in, I think. Get good GCSEs, get good A-levels in terms of just working hard there. Then from there, it's quite straightforward because, you know, you just do an interview or two after that, which is quite straightforward. They want to know about you and then you're in, really. And your second point on being transferable, I think you just have to think about what is your long-term ambition, because at that point you are expected to know what you want to do.
Any final wisdom of words?
Just have a positive attitude. I think apply yourself, work hard. Don't make it just about books and studying. Go out, get some fresh air, be kind to other people, because that definitely comes back to you. I'll tell you that. That's all. I mean, in terms of work, I don't want to be preachy around that, but I think work is just one element of what you do. I think there's a wider aspect to your life around that as well, and work's just being one. So if you apply like the basics right, if you think of it as a society as a whole, or if you think as the nature, take care of it as well. I think that definitely then translates into your work as well, for sure. And then, yeah, just explore, just think. It's definitely an option for me, and you can do a variety of things around those as well. So,
well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We learned a lot. PLB said he didn't get all his tax advice, but that's for podcast number 7.
I'll call you offline.
Let's do it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you coming to us.
Thanks for listening. Please join us again next episode as we explore yet another profession.
Your support is always appreciated, so please subscribe to Breaking Through Career Podcast and find us on social media.
Also, don't forget to check out the Resource Hub at www.breakingthroughcareers.com, where you can find advice for school leavers, university students, and career changers.
I did then what I knew how to do. Now that I know better, I do better. Maya Angelou.
See you next time. And if you enjoyed our first episode and would like to hear more, please go ahead and rate us on iTunes or your podcast app of choice. See you next episode.